This is Jérôme Dupont.
Been drinking it for years, but we're from Cheshire, so we've always had to travel a little bit down to Herefordshire, Somerset, right, for decent cider, but now there's more cider producers closer to home.
Vincent?
Oh, Vincent.
Godefroy.
Godefroy. Am I saying that right? Godefroy?
Godefroy.
How do I say your cidery's name?
Cider House is my town is Bretteville de Grandcourt.
So that's the town, is Bretteville,
yes,
de Grandcourt.
Yes.
And then the cider house is?
Écomusée du cidre.
Écomusée
de la pomme et du cidre. Yes.
Okay. I don't think you said that, though, did you? You just said where you were from. You didn't say what cider house you were from.
I know. I am best friend.
I know. That's why I do well on podcasts, because I'm so good at talking to myself.
That's funny.
Episode number 97. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, I'm going to be sharing with you the life of a cider podcaster who goes way out in the world on the hunt for the perfect cider story. There's going to be more on that in just a moment. Well, I think it's about time that we had a little bit of a world news report, and that is world news around the globe in Ciderville. And the first place I'm going to actually start is my own backyard, my spot of Ciderville, because there's a pretty large event that takes place every year on the first weekend of November. You've heard me talk about it before, and certainly I'm going to talk about it again, and that is Cider Days. You could go to ciderdays.org to find more info. And if you're coming this way and want to get prepared and in the groove, do go to episode number 46 called Going to Cider Days. There's a lot of info there. And I'd like to announce, and I'll be reminding you this running up to it, that there is going to be a special event once again. We're going to call it the second annual Cider Meetup at the Root Cellar. And that will take place on Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. So that's going to be Friday night, November 3rd, that is November 3rd, 2017. And this is a time for makers, whether you are commercial or non-commercial, to bring a bottle and share it. There's a $5 corking fee, and that's it. And Wendell, who owns the Root Cellar, is really kind to provide this space, a little bit of a warm spot, a really neat little bar right in the center of Greenfield, which is a pretty big hub for Cider Days. And just to give you a little bit of a upfront notice, some of the events venues have changed. Primarily, the Cider Salon has taken place at a ski resort more out towards the Berkshires, and now the Cider Salon is going to be outside in a tent in the town of Turner's Falls, which is a really hip little place. In past years, this has happened where they held the Cider Salon outside underneath the tent. In fact, for many, many years, it took place in different parts of what is called Franklin County. So I imagine it's going to work out fine. I'm sure they're going to get a big, large tent. And that spot there is called Unity Park, where they're going to be holding it. And that's right along the banks of the Connecticut River. Just a really stellar spot with a magnificent drop in terms of like a waterfall from one level to the other. And it's going to be something. There are a number of different venues in Turner's Falls to get some food, and there's a little brewery called Brick and Feathers that I cover in my other life as a beer writer. There's the Rendezvous, which is a hip little bar. There's a lot of nice places. And, of course, it's only a stone's throw away, the town of Greenfield, which is essentially Turner's Falls is on one side of the river and Greenfield is on the other side. Reluctantly, and I want to just say this is pretty kind of sad for me, I'm not going to be at Cider Days this year. Oh, it's so sad. It's so sad. I know. I could feel the pain. Oh, it kind of like hits me in the gut. Because I'm going to be out in California during that weekend. Oh, yeah, it's true. I'm going to be attending my niece's wedding, which is right smack on Cider Days weekend. She did not contact me beforehand. I'm not really sure why. If she had said that to me, I would have said, no way, Jose. But instead, I'm going to be heading right to San Jose, California. So although I won't be on the East Coast in one of my most favorite hubs in the world, seeing all the amazing people coming there, I do want to encourage you to attend Cider Days. And on the flip side, I'll be on the West Coast checking in with some amazing cideries and makers there too. So, you know, we do what we can, and that's the way it rolls. So again, check out episode number 46 and download your schedule today. Do make sure that you get your tickets now because they sell out really, really quickly. And I hope you do attend that event going to the Root Cellar. It's going to be a ton of fun. I get some really nice emails from listeners of Cider Chat, and I always really appreciate that. And this one from Jeremy really caught my attention because he titled the subject heading in the email as hard, in parentheses, cider origin. Man, what's this guy talking about? I don't really know, you know. So it looked like he was listening to the episode on Vermont Prohibition. And that was with Adam Krakowski, episode number 34. So that was aired quite a while ago. If you don't remember, I'm just going to play you a little bit at the beginning there because it was all about Prohibition. And I really enjoyed what the Talking Palms or how the Talking Palms brought us into this particular chat.
They'll never think twice about looking in the granite quarry for us.
Don't look up until you hear them passing.
Goodbye, coppers. Hello, cider.
Prohibition. Oh, I love that little beginning. And again, that is the Medlars and Mr. Quince who brought us into that episode number 34 with Adam Krakowski, who was speaking about Vermont Prohibition. And that's what Jeremy was referring to because we were talking about the term hard cider and where it came into existence. At what time in American history did that term start being used? Because in the beginning of America's history, as it was being colonized, the pilgrims and settlers here were using the term cider, but it changed. So he said, and or I should say he wrote, that he recently purchased a book entitled Winemaker's Recipe Handbook, and that was published in 1976. In there, it says that cider makers would freeze their 8% cider in the winter until it became slushy. They would then remove the ice to increase the strength. This process was called hardening. And Jeremy writes, that makes sense. Hardening it into ice. Yes, Jeremy, that does make sense. The interesting thing, and this book was written by Raymond Massessi, because the other thing that we call Applejack is where you take your cider and you put it out in the winter and it freezes, just as Raymond was writing in this book, Winemaker's Recipe Handbook, and you would extract that cider with very little water in it. And I never called it hard cider. I just called it Applejack. To make both products, you're using the process called freeze distillation. And distillation is distilling. You have two ways to distill. You heat the source to distill it, or in this case, you freeze the source to distill it. And both processes are extracting the water. They do differ definitely a bit more than that, but the main thing is to up the ante in terms of the ABV. And Applejack was not something that you're supposed to even today make because it's considered like a distilled or a spirit. So this makes sense. It's always been a term that I equated with that freezing. And certainly what you wrote about here, Jeremy, certainly makes sense too. And this is one of the convoluted ways that the cider terminology has evolved over time. And why we have two descriptors now for cider in America. The producers who are calling their product hard cider because it's such a familiar term. It separates it from the fresh pressed apple juice that is also commonly called cider, but it's non-alcoholic. Talk about consumer confusion. My goodness. It's amazing that we've gotten this far in Ciderville with a product that can really or has really taken an immense amount of twists and turns in the U.S. of A. I wouldn't say it has had that necessarily the same amount of twists and turns in other countries as folks here in the USA have, but there you have it. And the journey continues. So thanks again, Jeremy, for writing about that. And that certainly sets me off on another little quest. And I'll be following up on that. You know, I'm so excited, Ciderville, because I am in the throes right now of jumping in full steam ahead on this book about cider through time in America. And I am looking for images, information, and pictures, illustrations, pottery, all the different sources of how cider, specifically the apple, has evolved in the U.S. of A. So if you have more info like Jeremy has, please send it my way. And who knows, maybe your family photos or images or historic cider mill will get in this book, because it's going to be about those of us who live in this spot of Ciderville in North America. It's our history that we're covering, and I appreciate your help. You can send an email to Rhea, that's R-I-A, at ciderchat.com. That background music, I think, really hits upon what my life has felt like as of late. Fast-paced and on the go, go, go. And certainly, if you also are based in the Northern Hemisphere and it's harvest time, you could feel the pressure to stay on top of the apple trees and pear trees and all things palms, because the moment could pass you by, and that's something that you don't want to be looking back at. No, 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 no. So that certainly is busy, busy, busy. And of course, I was overseas in Europe, and that's what we're going to be delving into this week. So if you haven't already grabbed a glass, this is a good time to do that right now. And as always, if you are on the road or heading somewhere or riding a bike, well, keep your eyes on the road and your hands on the wheel, and there'll be a cider waiting for you on the other side. And in the meanwhile, I'm going to get your thirst right up there. I want to share with you a number of snapshots of what it's like to be on pursuit of cider out in the world. And mind you, I have the privilege of being able to be in Europe primarily because of another job I have that brought me there. And I tagged on some time and took off time from my work to be able to go there and to do a reconnaissance of sorts. If you've been listening along as a regular listener of Cider Chat, thanks a lot for being there. And if you're new to Cider Chat, well, welcome aboard this really fantastic train into a magical, mystical land that is actually reality-based. There's cider everywhere, wherever there's an apple. And we're going to be talking both about cider and poree. And this episode here is the beginning of a series that's going to be on that tour that I just took. And it's all kind of culminating for what I am building to bring to you next year in 2018. I have some travel tourist trips where folks could go on with me out into the world as we explore cider together. And this particular trip was to do that reconnaissance and really get some info and meet with makers and design the program. So that was based in France. But before I got there, I headed somewhere else, which I normally do every year, and that was in the Netherlands. Well, the sounds of Amsterdam in the park are just unique because you're in the Netherlands and it's just a whizzing of walking and bike riding. The only person really breathing in any kind of audible volume is me because I don't get the bike as much. But yeah, it is beautiful. I just think that this land is so fertile for cider and for cider tourism. I hope that the Dutch can embrace this piece because it's a different type of agriculture than the tulips are, which are unique unto itself, no doubt. But there are some amazing trees here, just like every spot in Ciderville, there's amazingness. So why not? I can't deny, I really love this experience, and there's places I know you could go around the world and ride your bikes on a little cider route, but to be able to do a cider route in this country, holy smoking Joe. Yeah, I want in on that experience for sure. It was my last day in the Netherlands. I was spending it in Amsterdam before I headed down to Normandy. I had rented a bike and had made my way to the Vondelpark. And right after I made this initial recording, I was amazed to see a tree that I had never seen before. It was a medlar tree. And this is a little bit of that recording. This is in the Vondelpark. I am riding along the episode of Finding the Medlar. Holy smokes, I'm just beside myself right now because it's essentially my first medlar, and that is just a reigning glory of what a medlar is. Just happened to just pass this tree that was, I thought, a peri-pear. So I have that, I'm trying to figure that out. And then I look over and I see a whole bunch of medlars just hanging in the tree. Huge, huge. I mean, this is size-wise, as round as a quarter, but a little bit bigger, and chunky little monkey here. Beautiful, beautiful. They're all up on the tree. There's a couple on the ground. These are, when I touch them, they're really, really hard. They're not necessarily soft at all. Thus, blet the medlar. You wait for the fruit to actually ripen, and upon ripening is when you then eat it, and it's called to blet the medlars, and a thing that was done in the Victorian era. I have actually never had a medlar, so I don't really know, but I'm excited to discover them. I planted my first pair of medlars this past spring, got Royal and Breda, and when I think about it, Breda is a city in the Netherlands. I don't think there's any relationship, but there you have it. So who knew, like, you know, in the park in Amsterdam, strolling down here are some amazing fruit. Thus, that was right after I just was thinking about how this place would be a fantastic place for a cider tour. Not only that, but the cider should be coming out here and collecting this fruit. Jeez, if I lived here, I would. Maybe I shouldn't even be talking about this, but that's the way it goes. You know, you got a good idea, you got to pass it on in Ciderville, just so that we all just have so much fun in this amazing location. Oh, it's out near the entrance, not too far from the Leidensplein. And, you know, as we say in mushroom picking, down a dirt road, find it if you can. But what a crowning glory. Wonderful day. This is, if this is everything that happens on this trip right now, even though I'm going to Normandy in a couple days, this absolutely takes a cake. So I will get a couple more photos of this and right on. Wow. I'm Beautiful. Okay, thank you so much for letting me go on and on about this one, because this is really something. Really good. Okay, back to the Medlar. Over and out. Ah, yes, it's true. It was my first Medlar that I found, and I was ecstatic. I was actually beside myself. I took a video, and that's going to go up on the Cider Chat YouTube channel, where there's actually quite a few little short videos of this here trip that I'm talking about on this episode number 97. If you want to see that Medlar tree, and it was a stunner, do take a look. And I want to correct myself a little bit. You actually let the Medlar fruit over-ripen, not just ripen, but it actually goes to the stage where it's getting kind of what you would typically consider funky. And that's when you eat it. And that's when the fruit is the best. So until you have a Medlar, you probably don't know that and experiencing that. And like I said in the little dialogue there, I have just recently planted two Medlar trees because I feel like, well, they hang out in pairs when they talk to me on Cider Chat. And they're part of the talking palms, and I just feel a certain affinity to them, much like I do with Mr. Quince and Perry Pear. So that was my little time in the Netherlands, and then next I was to head down to France. Parlez-vous français? No, me neither. But I was heading down to France nonetheless for a week, and I was going solo. I landed in Paris on a Sunday and headed straight out to the coast right outside of Honfleur, where you might have recalled where Agathe Letellier of Manoir d'April, who earlier was laughing on this podcast, and you know, what can I say about Agathe? She is just absolutely amazing. I love all her products that she makes. Fantastic, fantastic. I had to see her again. And so I set myself up with a little bit of an Airbnb. You know, you got to know, this whole trip was really low budget, and I was trying to like slide through as best I can. I got this Airbnb, and it was where a guy had own an apartment inside of a hotel or something. I don't really know the whole final outcome. It was a nice room, really clean, no complaints about the room. It even had an outside porch. The odd type of thing was that it was the fact that I was the only person there. At night when I arrived, it was all dark. There was lights, you know, it was safe to move around. I didn't feel threatened, but had it been anyone else, I think it might have been a little scary. And, you know, luckily I have a lot of experience being on the road. I hitchhike cross country the U.S. 5 times. So I have a little bit of street cred that way. So I felt safe, but I don't think I'd recommend it to other people to go there because it could have felt a little spooky. But what constantly held me is everywhere I looked, I saw palms. So this little snippet here is my first night out there decompressing and a little bit why I like to be in Normandy and some of my thoughts on, I was checking in on social media. I think I'll share it with you. What the heck? Here we go. And you might have to increase the volume for this section because I think I was talking a little bit quiet because for a short amount of time, there were some people outside and I didn't want them to think that I was, some kind of crazy lady talking to herself up on the porch. But there you have it. So crank the volume.
The reason why I really like coming to Normandy or going to some place like Asturias, and I've yet to go to the UK and drink cider there, but I can't freaking wait, is that you could drink a whole bottle. It's like 4.5%. I'm having a whole bottle to myself and I get to kick it back, and I like drinking cider that way. I like freaking kicking it back. Don't get me wrong, I like, you know, sipping it too, no doubt. But I love having a bottle of cider. That, to me, feels so abundant. and it's affordable. So, you know, that makes it abundant too. And I'm not getting wasted on it. You know, 4.5%. I have my little corker if I want to stop. And I also have another bottle that's like at 2%. So it's so subtle. I like that. I really do. I think it's kind of special that they have apples that can handle that type of low alcohol and still be absolutely tasty. Oh, here comes the rain now. Getting a little heavy. The first rain in Normandy. I wonder if we'll see any thunder and lightning. It doesn't feel very, very frightening. That's good. I love this beet. You have the opportunity to buy a full beet. It's in plastic at the grocery store, and it's sizable. I mean, I'm not going to eat this in one sitting. Maybe for a picnic, it would be great for everybody. It's a big beet, well cooked. The thing I like about it, when you're traveling, it's going to make you regular. And that's a good thing, because your system's all really off. You know, you got different kind of water, different kind of lighting, air, everything. Everything's different. So you want to find ways to keep yourself in sync when you're out there in the world. And having a beet, wow, that's a good one. But don't freak out, because it will make everything look like beet juice. Your pee, your poop could freak people out. And it's kind of funny. We spend all this time focusing on an apple or a pear and all the dynamics of it, but we get a little shy when we talk about such things. But it's true. that's a good thing to know on a travel trip, for sure.
My goodness, I think I was a little bit revealing, but that's how it goes when you're really trying to hone the skills of traveling, and not just traveling for yourself, but for other people, which is what this recon into Normandy was all about. I visited a number of places, both up in the Honfleur area, such as Agathe Letier, Jérôme Dupont, and then I headed over to the other side of Honfleur, a little bit north, where you met the person that I was talking to originally, trying to figure out his pronunciation. And that is Vincent, who has a museum and produces cider. He is not too far from a beautiful area of white cliffs, a well-known tourist area where people go just to see the beaches that were once, well, the place for you know, World War II barricades and whatnot with the Germans and against the Allied forces. But that is the White Cliffs of Etretat. And I went up and spoke to Vincent too. Then I headed over to the Domfront region and immersed myself in Poré. I was able to meet with a number of producers and had the opportunity to stay with Michel, who I just fell in love with. I spent two nights. That was another Airbnb situation. And as soon as I walked in the door, he had a bottle of Poré. And what was very interesting is this producer was not on the map. And if I had not met Michel, I would not have known about him. And as a result, I was able to hunt down Roland and get more info. So I stayed at Michel. While I was there, I went to Philippe's cidery and watched him crush pears for making both Poré and Calvados. And here is a question for you, Ciderville. What percent cider apples is there in a bottle of Calvados from Domfront? That's kind of how you say it, Domfront. You really have to like do a little bit of the nasal and express yourself deeply when speaking French. And it's so such an exquisite language. Remember that Domfront is the region where the Musée du Poré is. And that is an exquisite museum. There's a lot of little Musée du Cider, only one Musée du Poré in that whole area that I know of. And it's a Star Spangled Banner spot. If you don't know the answer, I will be speaking to a number of people about it in some upcoming chats, but the answer to what percent apples there is in a bottle of Calvados in Domfront, the answer is about 30%. The primary juice in Calvados made in that region is 70% pear, which is something that I didn't realize beforehand. And I found that a very interesting fact. And that's how the pear in that area, it has such an immense effect on the whole region. And certainly it did me. So it opened up a window into a universe I hadn't really been in before. And certainly they do a blend for Poiret and for Calvados. And what was interesting, when Philippe was pressing the pears for Calvados, he would just press the juice and then put it in the container and start fermenting. If he was making a blend for Poiret, of course, we'd also call that Perry, right? And I'm not even pronouncing it the right way as they say it, but Poiret, that's how I say it. When he would crush, you know, put it in the scratcher or the mill, all the pears, he would leave that pumice from the pears out for at least 24 hours to break it down, and then he would press it the next day. So that was, you know, some of the technique that they were using for all the different products that they make. There's an upcoming chat with him. Let's see, who else did I go see? There was just so many people, and I have a lot of these tidbits. Oh, and of course, I also was able to see Eric Bordelais, who I had on the chat last year. Let me just give you those show numbers, those episode numbers for both Eric Bordelais and Agathe. Agathe was episode number 49, and Eric Bordelais was episode number 57 and 58. One of my last nights in that region, Eric and I met up and had dinner together, and he happened to bring two bottles of Argillette, which is one of his ciders. I did not record that episode. It was primarily a discussion to speak to Eric about plans for 2018 that I'll be sharing with you. And in that, I was able to learn a bit about the tasting profiles of the Argillette and how he did that. So let me take a little break here and I'll come right back with that for you.
You gotta grab that luce. You gotta bust that thing. Get your kicks on the street. Gotta kick, clack, step back. Oh, you got to ski. It's a rat-a-tat-a-rat-a-tat-a-rat-a-tat-a-bala. Rat-a-tat-a-rat-a-tat-a-rat-a-tat-a-holla. I don't wanna be pushed like I do the push. When it comes to the cheddar, keep it under the cushion. I don't wanna be ganked like I do the gank. When it comes to the cake, be me a thank. I don't wanna be pushed like I do the push. When it comes to the cheddar, keep it under the cushion. I don't wanna be ganked like I do the gank. When it comes to the cake, be me a thank.
Like a lot of producers that I meet, not only in France, but all over Ciderville, you know, you're pretty thick in on it and pretty focused about what you are doing at your own cidery. And Eric is no different, even though his reach is worldwide. So I spend a lot of time just kind of catching up with him, which was really fun. But when he showed up at the table with two bottles of Argillette and a box with glasses specifically for his cider, I knew we were in for a very special treat. He poured both. One was a 2008 and one was a 2014. Unlike many makers, certainly in the U.S., who are unable to put the vintage date, Eric does have that on his bottles. And that is really handy because ciders can be aged or cellared if you want. And Eric takes the approach of with cider in the way one does with wine. And a little bit about his history. He was a sommelier in a a very well-known Paris restaurant, and actually throughout Paris. And even today, people who are in the know really looked up to him for that work that he had done. And he brought that forward into his cider. So his approach to the cider is really different than other cider makers that you see. I know there's a lot of makers out there who have a wine background, but I haven't really met at this point anyone quite like Eric Bordelais, who has this palate that's really unique. And just to be able to sit across the table from somebody with that quality, that background is really an amazing experience. So what he does is he's looking for a profile where he's really pulling up the soil. And that's how I experience it. He pulls up the soil, and throughout Normandy, and when you're talking to people, they're always talking about the minerality, the rocks, and how the rocks impact the trees. And of course, that also then impacts the fruit, in this case, the palms, in terms of the pears and the apples. And I didn't quite get what he was saying until, while we were ordering, he also ordered a bottle of red wine. And what was interesting about that particular red wine, it was so tannic. It really was very mineral and dried out. You could almost like on your teeth, we were both talking about it, you could like kind of like rub your teeth. It felt like it left a bit of a film on it. And that's a little bit what he's getting to with his cider. It's so deep, and you're like tasting the earth at a level that can be masked often, because ciders have so many other layers on it. There's so many fruit ciders, and until you really get a well-made, in this case, like an orchard-based cider, you're not going to be able to delve into that glass in the same way. So if you have a chance to have a bottle of Argolette, I recommend storing it. The 2008, he considered, could actually be aged for 2 more years. So that's like 2019, and then he felt that that would be it. So that's nearly 11 years for a cider to age. Well, not too bad. Not unusual for a wine to be also aged for about that long. Certainly there's ones that age for many, many years. We had a 2014, and to have the two up against each other was so different. Now, I had done an Argolette tasting before with Eric, but to have it with dinner and to see how it complemented the food, and I happened to have a fish that was on like a base of, I think, like a rice, and then also a savory cream sauce. It was just perfection. And earlier we had like a starter, and my starter happened to be like a warm salad. And unbeknownst to me, I had ordered chicken gizzard. And they were all kind of laughing at me, well, the waitress and Eric. But I really trust this restaurant because it's a place that he trusts. And I want to say it was the best darn chicken gizzard I ever had in my life. It was tender as tender can be. And I am now inspired to cook a gizzard and to have a bottle of Argolette. You get a dryness out of this cider. But if there's anything I could leave you with as you are trying to experience what it is about his particular ciders, it's that you are really tasting the earth at another level. Now, he might not say that, but that's what I get. So if you get that dryness, if you get that minerality, you're actually, if you were to lick one of the rocks, it's almost like at that level. And it brings that richness as you go along. Now, I'm not doing justice to this, and I'm really pleased to announce in this particular episode that Eric has agreed to be part of next fall's trip to Normandy and will be providing a seminar, if you will, lecture to the folks who come along with me to Normandy to speak about how one actually tastes cider. And I think it's going to blow our freaking mind. So I'm super stoked on that. And if you want to get in on this, and you know, there's going to be all the people that I mentioned earlier who I'm going to now be rolling out in the next couple of weeks of these stories from Normandy. It's going to be an amazing trip. We're going to get to be pressing poiret, getting to drink a hell of a lot of poiret, meet some makers that you couldn't find anywhere on the map. And of course, Jérôme Dupont, Get Lettier, who just does such a fine presentation for people who come to her cidery. I really haven't actually met anyone like her. So that trip's going to be happening in the fall, and in the spring, we're going to be going to the UK. And that's another trip that's going to be coming up with some stars out there too. I'm not going to let that fully out of the hat yet because I need to seal all those deals, but I'll be telling you about that sooner than you think. In the meanwhile, if you want to be notified early on about this trip, my first recommendation is to become a patron of Cider Chat, because the patrons of Cider Chat are going to be the first folks who will be able to sign up for this. And to become a patron means that you join the Cider Chat Patreon page. You could do that for as little as $1 a month. Commercial cider makers have another level or tier, and they get to become part of the Cider Going Up campaign. And those are the folks like Current Cider from Pennsylvania, Big Fish Cider Company in Monterey, Virginia, and Ramborn Cider Company in Luxembourg. But then there's all these non-commercial makers, people who are just loving the podcast, finding value in it, and know that I can't do it alone and I need that financial support to just, well, you know, pay for some of the music and some of the hosting and all that jazz. So I'm going to be putting that out first to the patrons of Cider Chat, who I always tip my glass to. And then it'll be going out to the email list before it then goes out live to the general public with the link to be able to sign up for this trip. It's going to be fantastic. And that's why I went to Normandy, to go to the places that we're going to see, to find the places that we want to actually visit, to expedite this process and make it the most exquisite, tasty experience possible. I cannot wait. It was a lot of work. It was really amazing. And this is just the beginning of a fantastic adventure. So that's a little snapshot in this week's podcast of what I did on my last 2 weeks as I'm catching up. And when we roll out next week, we're going to be speaking with Jérôme Dupont of the Dupont Cidery in Normandy and catching up with that. And I can't, again, wait. So hang on to your hat. We'll be right back. I just want to say it is so great to be back speaking with you and being able to publish this here episode number 97. It was a little bit of a glimpse into my life for the past 2 weeks, because I don't even know how you kind of cover that all. I would need a camera crew and audio team to really experience it. And that would be unique, I suspect, because there was a certain flavor about doing it solo. I got to go to places that, you know, sometimes you have to negotiate when you're with another person. And because I was alone, I would walk into different bars just because I'd want to, well, try a cider or get a cup of coffee. And out in the middle of nowhere, sometimes I'd walk into a bar, and I went into one bar, particularly in the town of Sosse, and wouldn't you know it, it was all Brits. The funny thing, though, you wouldn't believe, I had a hard time understanding them. It was the French who spoke English, and they would, albeit it was difficult for them to speak English, I would be able to understand them easier than I was able to hear or understand what the Brits were saying, because they had so many different dialects in that particular bar. I was just trying to catch up. And of course, I had an American accent. That is the blend of the world, and I just absolutely adore it. Well, at the end of this chat, I want to let you know there's going to be a little piece of me rambling along the road on the quest for cider, just to give you a sense of what it's all about. In the meanwhile, I'm out of here. This is Rhea Windcaller, signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville. Well, here I am on that classic ride down a country road in Normandy. It's typically rather skinny. I met a couple big trucks, so I had to pull up on the side of the road and just kind of rolled along. It's pretty easy. And I'm hunting down a producer of poré and cedar and trying to figure out how do I get there. And it's a little confusing, to say the least. You see a sign for cedar and or the route de Paris, but that's about it. That's about all you're going to see. So here I'm at a crossroad again. Don't really know where I'm going. And luckily I took a photo of Michel's topographical map, which is coming in very handy here. And I think I want to try to get a copy somehow. I don't know even how I could get something like that. But they sometimes are a little bit easier to find. And just wondering, okay, well, how do I get there? Oh, my goodness. I'm just going to kind of guesstimate now and take a right and go down the road a little bit and hopefully see some sign that might say Calvados or something like that, which is about your only guess. Other than that, you won't know what producer you are going to. It's pretty nondescript and, from my perspective, a little frustrating because I'm not sure if I'm going to the producer that I actually have marked to set aside time to go and taste their products or not. It's just essentially a producer, and then it's a gamble from there, which can feel a little awkward going in and trying a little bit and saying, and then thinking, I don't really want to get any. Not that, you know, it's bad to get a bottle. It's always good to support these folks because, like all producers around the world, cider makers, they're always increasing their skills, aren't they and aren't we? So let's see. Oh, I see a little sign here. Don't really know. What happens? You'll see a sign, and then it will show you a name of the different homes. If they are actually producers, that's one way to kind of figure it out. But, man, it is such a crap shot. Out here, just rolling right along.
Yeehaw!